All righty, so we are getting ready to study step 10, and the little introductory paragraph for step 10 is on page 8 in your 12 and 12. And let's go there. Oops, we lost Stephanie. Is she okay? Okay, step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Can we stay sober and keep emotional balance under all conditions? Self-searching becomes a regular habit. Admit, accept, and patiently correct defects. Emotional hangover. When you, that's all by itself. When past is settled with, present challenges can be met. Varieties of inventory. Anger, resentments, jealousy, envy, self-pity, hurt pride, all led to the bottle. And please note, every single item in that sentence that's listed is an emotion. Feelings, folks. It's always about feelings. Self-restraint, first objective. Insurance against big shotism. Let's look at credits as well as debits. Examination of motives. Ooh, good introductory paragraph. Lots of juicy stuff in this step. All righty, step 10. I will read this again. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. As we work the first 9 steps, we prepare ourselves for the adventure of a new life. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our AA way of living to practical use day by day in fair weather or foul. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober? Keep an emotional balance and live to good purpose under all conditions. I say, so it's, can we stay sober? That we can do perfectly one day at a time. Keep an emotional balance, that's always a work in progress. And live to good purpose under all conditions, also a work in progress. Hopefully we grow in both of the second and third conditions. A continuous look at our assets and liabilities and a real desire to learn and grow by this means are necessities for us. We alcoholics have learned this the hard way. More experienced people, of course, in all times and places, have practiced unsparing self-survey and criticism. And yes, criticism means exactly what it says, not the kind of criticism where we're just trying to beat ourselves up, but critical thinking, looking at ourselves as if we were looking at something else that we wanted to see every aspect of, good and bad. For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. Until he is able to admit and accept what he finds, and until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong. Yeah, talking about keeping after it no matter what. Doesn't say we only patiently and persistently try to do it if we're successful. No, even if we're unsuccessful, we have to keep after it. When a drunk has a terrific hangover because he drank heavily yesterday, he cannot live well today. But there is another kind of hangover which we all experience, whether we are drinking or not. That is the emotional hangover, the direct result of yesterday's and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotion, anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. If we would live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. Interesting that he doesn't say we have to eliminate the feelings because we can't, but the hangovers. This doesn't mean we need to wander morbidly around in the past. Excuse me, it requires an admission and correction of errors now. Our inventory enables us to settle with the past. When this is done, we are really able to leave it behind us. When our inventory is carefully taken and we know we have made peace with ourselves, the conviction follows that tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come. And what's coming up in the next paragraph, I want to say some things before I get to it. It's talking about the different timing of the different kinds of inventory. And I want to point out something realistic. Listen. If you do an inventory very early in your beginning of your sobriety, you know, the capacity to be honest is limited at that point. We want to be as honest as we can at that moment. That doesn't mean that as our brain clears more and as we just learn more about doing life in this way of life, excuse me, that we're not going to need to go back, and because there are troublesome areas that'll keep popping up and popping up. And that need to be looked at deep dive wise. And that's what I call, for me, the difference between a fourth step and a 10th step. A fourth step is a deep dive into myself to look at motives, causes, really causes and conditions. A 10th step, as we're going to learn in this next paragraph, is something that has to happen on the spot or at the end of a single day, that kind of thing. It's a short look. It's not a deep dive. It's a look at, did I do something wrong? Oh, yeah, I did that wrong. Let me fix it, you know, that kind of thing. But I can tell you, as a person, as a survivor of severe child abuse, I still have to do deep dive fourth inventories. Not about everything, but as areas come up, I have to look. I have to look at what's going on with me. What are my motivations? What am I up to? You know, that kind of thing. And so I know that even here, he almost implies, oh, you're only ever going to do one fourth step. I don't think so. I think anybody who's honest with themselves will say there are times when they need to go back, even if you're not a survivor of abuse, just to look at our humanness, right? Because the part of us that likes to do whatever it wants to do, whenever it wants to do it, whether it's right or wrong, is always going to be hanging out trying to find a way to get its way, that's for sure. So now, let's take a look at the different categories of inventory. Although all inventories are alike in principle, the time factor does distinguish one from another. There's the spot check inventory taken at any time of the day whenever we find ourselves getting tangled up. There's the one we take at day's end when we review the happenings of the hours just past. Here we cast up a balance sheet, crediting ourselves with things well done and chalking up debits where due. Then there are those occasions when alone or in the company of our sponsor or spiritual advisor, we make a careful review of our progress since the last time. Now that's talking about fourth step type things. Many AAs go in for annual or semi-annual house cleanings. Many of us also like the experience of an occasional retreat from the outside world where we can quiet down for an undisturbed day or so of self-overhaul and meditation. And so I had this conversation with Alia when she shared with everyone her list of little columns, you know, and I took a look at that. And I said, I gave her a preview of this step because I read to her this paragraph we just read. I said, look, honey, and I gave her a beautiful example of how you cannot do all those columns. Look, so let's say that I told her, I said, let's say you decided to go visit your friends in the UK. And you had your arrangements were all set. You had your plane ticket and something came up before you left the house that ran you a little late. So now you're running late. You're getting to the airport. You're going in the door of the airport. You're rushing to get there so you can get on the plane. And somebody's coming out the door the same time you're going in and you bump into them, not on purpose, but because you're very self-focused and watching your watch and all. I said, and you almost knocked them over. I said, you don't have time to pull out that sheet of columns and go through all of there's no moment. You have to turn to that person and say, oh, ma'am, I am so sorry. I was just not paying attention. I hope I didn't hurt you or damage anything. I'm really sorry. You have just taken your 10th step on that. You knew you did something wrong. You admitted it and you made an amends for it. There is no need to go back and do that. You know, you may look and say, you know, later, once you get settled on the plane, you might say, you know, really, I could work on paying attention to things better if I can, staying more focused when I'm not frazzled by something, you know, maybe that's something you can deep dive and say, do I have a pattern of this? Every time I something's going on, am I so self-focused that I ignore everything or everybody around me? Is this a pattern I practice on a regular basis? Then you can actually do a fourth step on that whole issue, but you don't owe another amends. You owe a look at yourself at a deeper level. If it was just a one-time thing that could happen to any human being, any of us, then you've handled it. So that's the difference between the inventories and the depth with which we do them, is that a fourth step is when you set aside time for that. Now, I'm not saying everybody has to take the approach to the fourth step that I do. I live in a state of readiness for deep dive. It's just the way, it's just because it's what I have to look at myself that way. Do I think everybody does? No. But I think we can find our own rhythm and pattern as to how often we want to go back and look at ourselves. You know, maybe once every 5 years if you're a pretty healthy individual and just had a drinky poo problem. You know what I'm saying? There are people like that. As a matter of fact, the case history of Fred in chapter 3 in the big book, More About Alcoholism, looks at a person like that. He was a very healthy person. He just had a drinking problem, and the rest of his life was very good when he wasn't drinking. He was very healthy, very together, very, very professional, you know, all of that. Everybody loved him. He just had a drinking. So, you know, I think everybody has to find their own rhythm with that, but there is a huge difference in this. And so I know that in the years when I still worked, in the years in recovery when I still worked a full-time job, I couldn't always stop and do a spot check in the moment when something happened, because I was dealing with the fellow employees. I was often the one answering the phone. I was a Girl Friday in quite a few of the companies I worked for, as a bookkeeper, office manager, receptionist, you name it, I did it all. I could not stop with people all around me and having to deal with them, and even do a 10th step right there when something came up. But I would make a quick mental note, deal with that when you get home tonight, you know. So I would did a lot more of end of day 10th steps in those days. The years that I've been retired, I really do very few end of day 10 steps, because I'm able pretty much to do them when they happen. So every time I have any kind of transaction with anybody, whether it's in program or I'm on a business a phone call for personal business with a company or the government or whatever, when it's over, even if I don't think I did anything wrong to my knowledge, excuse me, at the moment, I'll review that. I review every transaction I have. So even when I'm in a meeting like today, when it's over, I will look at everything I did and said to you guys individually in our discussion afterwards. I can do it pretty much in the moment, and I often find things that I need to make an amends for, as far as I'm concerned, or that maybe I had something important I would like to have said and didn't think of it. And you know, so everybody will find their own rhythm with that based on the reality of their life. But there is a huge difference between the timing and the availability to do inventories as to what kind they are. I hope that's made very clear from this. So moving back to the book, aren't these practices joy killers as well as time consumers? Must AA spend most of their waking hours drearily rehashing their sins of omission or commission? Well, hardly. The emphasis on inventory is heavy only because a great many of us have never really acquired the habit of accurate self-appraisal. Once this healthy practice has become grooved, it will be so interesting and profitable that the time it takes won't be missed. Amen, amen, and amen. Now, those of you who have done it, no, boy, oh boy, when you really take a look at something and look at your part, if you've got a part that you can work on and deal with it, it is such a blessing as you begin to receive recovery and healing in those areas. For these minutes and sometimes hours spent in self-examination are bound to make all the other hours of our day better and happier. And at length, our inventories become a regular part of everyday living rather than something unusual or set apart. Before we ask what a spot check inventory is, let's look at the kind of setting in which such an inventory can do its work. This is a tough one. Here's one of the hard truths in this step in the 12 and 12, and it's so hard, but it is so true. It is a spiritual axiom, which is a word for truth or law or principle. So it is a spiritual truth that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. Wow, that's a tough one. So it does what that means. Well, let's go on and read the rest of this paragraph, then I'll comment on that. If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about quote unquote justifiable anger? If somebody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. So why is it a spiritual truth that every time we are disturbed, there's something wrong with us? Because we're locked into our humanness in that moment, and we're not on the beam of wanting God's will. We're very locked into ourself. We're very self-focused, and we're in the wrong there. And that's what has to be straightened out. Even because people, let's face it, I certainly have been the one who have done things to people who didn't ask for it. I did it and I was wrong. So certainly that happens to me. And I always tell people, listen, if you were abused or mistreated as a child, that is not your fault. Now, it may have ultimately created very wrong coping mechanisms to survive that if it was continuous, if it was chronic. And then, you know, you wind up doing wrong things around that and you got to deal with it. But that's, you could approach that more. Other than going back into childhood to understand where it started, you still have to deal with what you did as an adult and, you know, and try to correct it with God's help. So, excuse me. So the thing is to get back on our beam of where we're on our AA beam. And so anything that throws us off means we have to come back on. And of course, that's talking a lot about emotional sobriety, isn't it? I say emotional sobriety is a wonderful goal towards which to work. I have no expectations or even a hope, realistically, that I'm going to someday in this life reach a place where I am perfectly and continually, one day at a time, emotionally sober like I'm physically sober. It's not, I'm just a normal human. Things are going to happen that are going to affect me, and I'm going to have an emotional human reaction to them. I still need to calm that down eventually and get back on my beam, but I'm not going to beat myself up because I have a moment or a few moments or a half hour or even a whole day if something really, really deeply troubling happens where I'm not quite back into any emotional sobriety. It's okay. That's a work in progress. To be okay with it being something we'll always be working on is the healthiest, most peaceful place to be with that, with emotional sobriety. And I also want to say, interestingly, I mean, I know not everybody here is biblical, but there's a couple of scriptures I like to use in reference to anger that I like. One of them says, don't let the sun go down upon your anger. I like that, to try to resolve any anger I may have before I go to sleep, because it's not going to be good for my health. If nothing else, I'm going to be troubled by that. That's part of correcting what's wrong. And I love, there's another scripture that says, be angry and sin not. Now that means I can feel the emotion of anger, but not act it out in a detrimental way. I can deal with it without acting out on it. That's not so easy, right? It's a tough one, but I like those, and they encourage me to allow myself, my right to be human, but to be careful about as I can about how my humanness acts out in the world. All right. So few people have been more victimized by resentments than have we alcoholics. Oh boy, is that true. It mattered little whether our resentments were justified or not. A burst of temper could spoil a day, and a well-nursed grudge could make us miserably ineffective. Nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, could keep us on an emotional jag indefinitely. These emotional dry benders, which is another word for a dry drunk, often led us straight to the bottle, became a wet drunk. Other kinds of disturbances, jealousy, envy, self-pity, or hurt pride did the same thing. A spot check inventory taken in the midst of such disturbances can be a very great help in quieting stormy emotions. Today's spot check finds its chief application to situations which arise in each day's march. The consideration of long-standing difficulties had better be postponed, when possible, to times deliberately set aside for that purpose. And here he's confirming what I shared back in from the earlier paragraph about the time element. The quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. Sometimes, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes the transitional stage of a temptation doesn't even come, man. I have the feeling and I react. It's like, boom, from one to the other. There's no transitional of me considering, what I feel like doing is wrong. No, boom and boom, you know, I'm just right into it. Yeah. And I think that's very human. I don't think I'm unique in that in one tiny little bit. In all these situations, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what is involved, a willingness to admit when the fault is ours, and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. Now, I did want to mention something from previous. I'll finish this paragraph, though. We need not be discouraged when we fall into the error of our old ways, for these disciplines are not easy. We shall look for progress, not for perfection. And I've read this before, but this is a good place to remind us of one of my favorite pages, again, in the As Bill Sees It. If you want to get out your As Bill Sees It book, it's page 6. Easy and quick to get to. I love this one. Really helps with self-acceptance and where we are. This is the all or nothing ? And again, acceptance and faith are capable of producing 100% sobriety. In fact, they usually do. And they must, else we could have no life at all. But the moment we carry these attitudes into our emotional problems, we find that only relative results are possible. Nobody can, for example, become completely free from fear, anger, and pride. Sorry about that. Hence, in this life, we shall attain nothing like perfect humility and love. So we shall have to settle, respecting most of our problems, for a very gradual progress, punctuated sometimes by heavy setbacks. Our old-time attitude of all or nothing will have to be abandoned. Good stuff. Such good stuff. Now, I wanted to share, you know, talking about carrying a grudge forever. When I was a little girl, I had a tendency to do that. I don't know when it started, because my full memory of my childhood goes all back to age 3, and I don't remember when I didn't have that. And I would hold grudges against people for the weirdest things, just weird stuff. I don't know when I let go of that. I don't know if I began letting go of doing that when I became a Christian, or if I, when I came into recovery. All I know is I don't hold grudges anymore. And sometimes just out of self-defense, because holding on to grudges brings a bitterness into our being that is like an acid, and it'll eat away at what is lovely in us. And I don't want that anymore. So I, you know, I don't want to go there. I'd rather forgive, even if it's only for my own sake, just to keep my spirit as sweet as it possibly can be this side of the grave, you know? So back to our book. Our first objective will be the development of self. Oh, I did read that. Sorry. I think I stopped. No, I didn't. No, I know. Sorry about that. This is mentioned again. It was mentioned in the beginning of the other paragraph preceding. Our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. This carries a top priority rating. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. One unkind tirade or one willful snap judgment can ruin our relations with another person for a whole day, or maybe a whole year, or maybe forever sometimes. Nothing pays off like restraint of tongue and pen. We must avoid quick-tempered criticism and furious, power-driven argument. The same goes for sulking or silent scorn. Pouting as all kinds of... Pouting involves self-pity, and boy, am I going to punish you for what I think you did to me. Let me do whatever I can to make you feel guilty. That's what that stuff does. Oh, my goodness. These are emotional booby traps baited with pride and vengefulness. Our first job is to sidestep the traps. When we are tempted by the bait, we should train ourselves to step back and think. For we can neither think nor act to good purpose until the habit of self-restraint has become automatic. And I can tell you, under certain conditions, that sometimes is still... But I've gotten one place where I found a really great solution, and I'd like to pass it on to you guys that I found. So when when I'm upset at something a company has done to me, and I got to call customer service and work it out, and I'm in personal indignation, right? And so what I used to do is, as soon as I'd get a live customer rep on the phone, I'd start ranting at what I was angry about the company for. And almost always they took it personally. I think it's been during COVID, having to take care of more of my personal business on the web or on the phone than ever. And I finally thought, Shelley, you're not really angry at that person, but you're really offending them, right? So I meditated on that, and I came up with a solution that works beautifully every time. So when I know I'm in that frame of mind, and that as soon as the customer service rep comes on, I'll say, thank you. I say, I want to let you know I am not angry at you. I am just angry at your company, and I need to rant a little bit at how I feel about them. And you know, they're always very good with, because I already let them know this is not you I'm angry at. And at the end, when I'm done, whether they've been able to help me or not, when I'm done and we are saying goodbye, I'll say, I always ask for their first name. I like to, because I like to speak it directly. And so let's say the person says, oh, my name is Linda. And I say, Linda, thank you so much for your patience and your kindness and your tolerance of me. I know I'm not easy to work with sometimes and deal with. And I want to wish you a blessed day, whatever's left of it, wherever you are. And you know, I always part on beautiful terms. So there's no amends needs to be making. So appreciation, a warning when, so, you know, it really, really works. I've not had it fail me yet. And I've used it a lot of times since I've come up with it. And it makes me feel good when I know I'm going to do it before I ever get the person on the phone. I'm already feeling good about myself, because I know I'm going to make relations with them okay, and I'm not going to injure them. That feels really, really good. Um, Okay, so disagreeable or unexpected problems are not the only ones that can that call for self-control. We must be quite as careful when we begin to achieve some measure of importance and material success. For no people have ever loved personal triumphs more than we have loved them. Oh, good grief, yes. We drank of success as of a wine which could never fail to make us feel elated. When temporary good fortune came our way, we indulged ourselves in fantasies of still greater victories over people and circumstances. Thus blinded by prideful self-confidence, we were apt to play the big shot. Of course, people turned away from us, bored or hurt. That's right. That's why when people sometimes say to me, because I'm very out there, I'm comfortable. I don't care. The bigger the audience, the more I love it. I have a performer's ego. And people say, you seem self-confident, so self-confident. I go, I ain't interested in self-confidence. Thank you very much. I want God confidence. My confidence will let me down and many times get me in trouble. I want God confidence because he's never going to fail me, and that's a goodie to have. Anyway, now that we're in AA and sober and winning back the esteem of our friends and business associates, we find that we still need to exercise special vigilance. As an insurance against big shotism, we can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that any success we may be having is far more his success than ours. That's right. I put the plug in the jug, but he gave me the grace and strength to do it and to keep it there. And for me, I have to keep the jug out of my house one day at a time forever. And so I'm glad he helps me do that every day. Finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill. Yes, we're all broken, as well as frequently wrong. So yes, so one of my favorite things when I'm talking one-on-one, but since I'm not one-on-one here, I like to say this is a broken world filled with broken people, of which you and I are seven, right? We're not just one. You and I are one. You and I are seven. Every one of us is broken, some of us more than others, but we all have a certain amount of brokenness with us, in us. So as well as frequently wrong, let me start that sentence again because it's a long one and I stopped in the middle. Finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill as well as frequently wrong. And then we approach true tolerance and see what real love for our fellows actually means. It will become more and more evident as we go forward that it is pointless to become angry or to get hurt by people who, like us, are suffering from the pains of growing up. Such a radical change in our outlook will take time, maybe a lot of time. Yes, hear, hear. Not many people can truthfully assert that they love everybody. Most of us must admit that we have loved but a few, that we have been quite indifferent to the many, so long as none of them gave us trouble. And as for the remainder, well, we have really disliked or hated them. Although these attitudes are common enough, we AAs find we need something much better in order to keep our balance. And for us in AA, the word balance implies emotional sobriety, which means we're handling things in a reasonable fashion in our life, both action and emotion-wise. We can't stand it if we hate deeply. The idea that we can be possessively loving of a few, can ignore the many, and can continue to fear or hate anybody has to be abandoned, if only a little at a time. And so that's why I love to say, doing something is better than doing nothing, even if we only take baby steps. I like to call it humorously microscopic progress. Let me see how much I've moved in such and such an area. Oh, let me look under my God microscope here. Oh, yes, I moved a millisecond of an inch or something there. Okay, that's progress. Thank you, God. You know, I'm glad to be moving and not stuck or moving backwards for sure. And there was something else I wanted to say here, but I can't remember what it was. About love. And I think I mentioned this maybe in step three. I'm not sure, but you know, the Greek language is really an interesting language because they have a different word for each category of love. There's brotherly love, which is familial love, our family. There's romantic love. Filial, I think, is where the name of one of our cities, Philadelphia, came from. I think it's Philia. I don't know what the Greek word. There's eros for romantic love, erotic, and where the word erotic comes from. There's several categories in each one, and then there is one called agape, which is designated as the God love. The perfect love is the agape love, and so that kind of love can include warm, fuzzy emotions. They can include it, but it doesn't have to. Because I can treat somebody with love, whether I feel like it or not, because the agape love is striving for and wanting what's best for the person we say we love. So doing whatever it takes to do what's good for their life or to want for them what's good for their life. And I can actually be angry at somebody if they've done something that hurt me or offended me and still behave towards them in a way that at least leads whatever I'm doing towards their best blessing, what's good for them. So the best love is not even a feeling. It's about a principle, isn't it? It's about caring enough about our fellow man to want what's best for each one of them as we are able, if we are able to contribute to that and at least feel, at least put that forth in our thoughts and principles. So practicing these principles in all our affairs. So when I think about loving someone, I may not like things they do or say. That doesn't mean I can't treat them with agape love. Matter of fact, when it comes to liking what people do or say, I don't even like everything I do or say. How can I expect to like everything anybody else does or says? Not possible. We all fail. We all disappoint ourselves and others. Yes, it's just life. We can try to stop making unreasonable demands upon those we love. Now that's going back to step seven. There was that last page in step seven in this book. Let me go back there. Where am I? On page 76, where it said at the end of the first paragraph on that page, we now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon ourselves, upon others, and upon God. So we're back visiting that again. And it talked about eventually how the difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to anyone. All right, so okay, so let me back here on page 93, the second paragraph. We can try to stop making unreasonable demands upon those we love. We can show kindness where we had shown none. With those we dislike, we can begin to practice justice and courtesy, perhaps going out of our way to understand and help them. That whole paragraph is talking about practicing the agape love, the love that wants what's best for others. Whenever we fail any of these people, we can promptly admit it to ourselves always and to them also, when the admission would be helpful, meaning as long as we don't harm them, those folks, or somebody else, as long as we're not harming other people. Back to steps 8 and 9 there. Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love are the keynotes by which we may come into harmony with practically anybody. When in doubt, we can always pause saying, "Not my will, but thine be done." And we can often ask ourselves, am I doing to others as I would have them do to me today? The golden rule. Great rule. The negative aspect of that, just for a spot of humor, is when people turn that around and say, do unto others before they do unto you. When they're looking to get angry. I mean, that's how some of us are or have been, for sure. Very human. When evening comes, perhaps just before going to sleep, many of us draw up a balance sheet for the day. This is a good place to remember that inventory taking is not always done in red ink. It's a poor day indeed when we haven't done something right. Even if we can look and say, thank you, God, at least I didn't pick up a drink today. Sometimes that's about the best we can do. And that matters. It's important because it's that foundation on which we're trying to live life the way it's meant to be lived, the right way. As a matter of fact, the waking hours are usually well filled with things that are constructive. Good intentions, good thoughts, and good acts are there for us to see. Notice good intentions. I know the world has a saying, and there are places where it applies and is very applicable, that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I know that. I know what that's a very specific kind of condition, though. Good intentions, when we are really contributing constructively and productively to the world around us and even into our own little world, those count. And I believe, well, while God cares absolutely very much about what we do and say, I believe he looks on our heart primarily. And if we want to do the right thing and tried to do it and failed, even if we failed, he is pleased that we wanted to do it and tried. That matters to him. So that's about good intentions, right? And trying to follow through them. So good intentions matter. So good intentions, good thoughts, and good acts are there for us to see. Oh, yes. He's going to say now what I just mentioned. Even when we have tried hard and failed, we may chalk that up as one of the greatest credits of all. Under these conditions, the pains of failure are converted into assets. Out of them, we receive the stimulation we need to go forward. Here's another hard truth coming up. Someone who knew what he was talking about once remarked that pain was the touchstone of all spiritual progress. I like that all is in there. Why is that important? Let's look at that, because it's really important. Why is it? I'm here to tell you, my spirit can want to do something really right. And my humanness, I've shared this many times, I'm up against my humanness. It is who it always was, you know. And they'll say, I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it. Up yours. I'm going to go do it right now. You can deal with it your way, you know. And so when he says it, so the only thing that makes my humanness pay attention to something besides what it wants to do is when I suffer enough from it. I wish I could tell you I don't still need pain as the consequences of my bad choices to help me to take charge and authority over my humanness. I still do. I'm still very flawed in that way. Whatever ways feel good. And if the feel good is better than the consequences in my human perspective, I'm still struggling with that. And why do I say I'm not proud of it? But I share it because if you guys find yourself struggling, if you are fortunate enough to get 40 or 50 years of sobriety or 35 years of sobriety, even, and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I am where I am, struggling with what I'm struggling with. Oh yeah, please. You know, that's a part of it. Making peace. That's where acceptance comes in. Making peace with our realities, that's what I call it, plural, is really important for the ability to stay sober by God's grace and to keep plugging forward and to enjoy out of life the moments we can enjoy. It's really critically. So let's read that again. Pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. Do I like feeling pain? Am I masochistic? No, I'm not. But I like the utility of pain, meaning I like the end result of when God is disciplining me through pain as a result of my bad choices. I like the results that pain brings because of my humanness finally surrenders, it gives up, and is willing to cooperate with what's right. I like the end result of that. It's only God's blessings. Amen. So he says, how heartily we AAs can agree with him. For we know that the pains of drinking had to come before sobriety and emotional turmoil before serenity. As we glance down the debit side of the day's ledger, we should carefully examine our motives in each thought or act that appears to be wrong. In most cases, our motives won't be hard to see and understand. I want to say here too again that that if you've got time and your end of day can be a deep dive as well as a 10th step for the day, do it. But sometimes even the end of the day, if it's been a big long day and we're tired and we just want to get asleep and we're doing it before we go to sleep, you can do the short version and look and say, is there anything I did wrong that I owe and that I was wrong, that I was wrong and owe an amends for? Oh, yeah, there's that there and there's that there. And say, as soon as I can reach those people, I will make an amends to them. So we can even do the spot check for our end of day, as well as in the moment when it happens. And when we're the ones we do in the moment when it happens. So so he says, in most, let's see, as we glance down the debit side of the day's ledger, we should carefully examine our motives in each thought or act that appears to be wrong. In most cases, our motives won't be hard to see and understand. When prideful, angry, jealous, anxious, or fearful, again, emotions, we acted accordingly, and that was that. Here we need only recognize that we did act or think badly, try to visualize how we might have done better, and resolve with God's help to carry these lessons over into tomorrow, making, of course, any amends still neglected. But in other instances, only the closest scrutiny will reveal what our true motives were. There are cases where our ancient enemy, rationalization, and may I put in there justification also, those two are twins, they're stapled, they're soldered together for me, rationalization and justification. With rationalization, the tendency to justify it always seems to be right there with it. So rationalization has stepped in and has justified conduct which was really wrong. The temptation here is to imagine that we had good motives and reasons when we really didn't. And this comes under how good our rigorous honesty with ourselves is, isn't it? And that's something else we can only grow in as time goes by. Rigorous honesty is so critical. And I know when I came in, I had a lot of cash register honesty. Didn't mean I never stole something, but I was honest. When I saw that, and I was kind of honest with myself, I knew some hard truths about myself, just didn't know where to get help until I came in program. But the kind of honesty that we need to develop in order to stay sober and go forward in our spiritual life is, brother, it is intense. It is not anything that your average bear is going to have. I always like to liken it to, I'm not a bodybuilder, but I've heard them say when they do their exercises, pumping iron or doing push-ups or whatever they're doing, they do it till it burns, till their muscles burn. That way they know they've gotten through to those muscles, right? And so I say that rigorous honesty in reference to our behavior and our emotional status and our spiritual growth and condition, we have to do it till it burns, till we feel the pain of looking at the reality of who we are and where we're coming from. That's a good hurt, because that's me going, you know what? That needs some work and some growth and some change by God's grace and strength. Yeah, so. Let's see, where did I stop? Can somebody help me where I stopped?
We constructively criticize.
Ah, thank you very much. Yes, we constructively criticize someone who needed it when our real motive was to win a useless argument. Or the person concerned not being present. We thought we were helping others to understand him, when in actuality, our true motive was to feel superior by pulling him down. Yeah, that's a tough one. We sometimes, because there's such a fragile fine line between when someone comes and says, well, so-and-so did or said such and such to me and I'm hurt, and you want to hear about them. There's that fine line between trying to understand the person who was the wounder, the one who was the one who did the wounding, to understand that person and what might have motivated them to do that and what they may have been coming from in their own brokenness, and helping the one you're trying to help understand that about them so they can forgive them and understand them as well. Fine line between that and gossip. It's really, you really have to be on top of what you're doing. That comes into counseling and hearing, being receiving counsel as to how we do it. We have to really be careful not to gossip. They're so close to each other. Really have to be very astute. Really practice rigorous honesty about what we're trying to do. Okay, we're pulling him down. We sometimes hurt those we love because they need to be taught a lesson when we really want to punish. We were depressed and complained we felt bad when in fact we were mainly asking for sympathy and attention. There's a gal in one of my meetings I go to, and when her camera's not on, a still meme she puts up there, and it's a picture of two hands holding like this, and the caption is in the hands and says, "Here, I'm giving you what you're seeking, attention." So I really like that. That's a good one. Yes. So this odd trait of mind and emotion, this perverse wish to hide a bad motive underneath a good one, permeates human affairs from top to bottom. This subtle and elusive kind of self-righteousness, where's my tissue, can underlie the smallest act or thought. Learning daily to spot, admit, and correct these flaws is the essence of character building and good living. An honest regret for harms done, a genuine gratitude for blessings received, and a willingness to try for better things tomorrow will be the permanent assets we shall seek. Having so considered our day, not omitting to take due note of things well done, and having searched our hearts with neither fear nor favor, we can truly thank God for the blessings we have received and sleep in good conscience. Okay, you can turn the recording off.